You're listening to Tech Trend Investments with Elizabeth Powell and Joseph Grassa, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Tech Trend Investments. It's Tuesday evening. This is Elizabeth Powell.
And this is Joseph Grassa.
We should say bonsoir. Wait, how do you say bonsoir. Good evening in French? Bonsoir. See?
Oui? I think so. Oui, no? I don't know.
Oui is yes in French. Bonsoir. So it's not bonjour. Bonjour is morning. So it's 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time where I'm at. So bonsoir. Good evening.
6 p.m. California. I would have to look that up. I had to take French in school, and I still don't even know bonsoir. Usually it was like in the morning, it was like just bonjour, and that's all we said.
Bonjour, bonsoir. Comment ça va? How are you?
Ça va bien.
There we go. So I'm in St. Lucia now. St. Lucia is one of the Caribbean islands, and they speak Creole and French and English out here.
French.
Mm-hmm.
So out of all the Caribbean islands, you've been to one that's Spanish, I guess English and French now?
French, yeah. Well, I mean, they speak their different dialects, like kind of like California. California has its, we were talking about this the other night, California has slang, like depending on what part of California you're at. And if you go to Italy, they all speak Italian, but they speak in their own dialect, in their own slang from region to region. So like northern Italy versus southern Italy has like a different version of Italian because it has its slang. So same thing with the islands. The islands are owned by different countries. Like the Caribbean islands are owned by different countries, but they all have the primary, like they have English, and then they also have their primary language of the island, and then they have their slang. So probably if they went to France or they went to somewhere else, they would have like a little bit of a slang, a dialect.
That's super cool. It's different. It's like a different culture everywhere you go. So you get to experience every island has its own different culture. It's a different experience everywhere. And like I think you mentioned that different islands make you feel a different way. And this one in St. Lucia, it's super homey.
Yeah, I feel really at home here for some reason. I don't know. It's been raining, so there's been storms coming through Florida and some storms through the Caribbean. So I haven't really experienced a lot of rain except for when I first flew in, when Beryl was coming in. But there hasn't been much rain lately. And so it's been raining the last 24 to 40 hours. But this one, just like each location too has like its wonderful smell, like of baked goods or of clean laundry or like the plants. Like there's each of the islands have like their own like unique, like beautiful smell. It's kind of funny, but this one's like very comfortable. I feel like I'm in a warm blanket. Like I just feel comfortable here, I guess. I don't know how to describe it. Yeah.
I guess the aroma is just so relaxing. It's like, yeah, I can chill here. This is relaxing.
Well, it might be because it reminds me a lot of Hawaii too, because it's very lush and green and they have mountains and a lot of vegetation and everything's like green. So lots and lots of plants everywhere, like kind of like Hawaii or Kauai has. So maybe there's familiarity there, but. And then driving on the roads, so they drive on the left side here also. The cars have their steering on the right. You sit on the right for the driver's side, and then they drive on the left side of the road. But I'm not driving a car on this one. I had taxi service from the airport to here, but they drive on the left side of the road, and there's windy roads. It's all windy roads, kind of like Dingle Peninsula in Ireland, like the windy roads on the mountains, or like in Tahoe, the mountains, the windy roads on the mountain. But yeah, coming over here, I had to take an hour and a half drive from the airport to the resort on the windy roads on the mountain. So I'm just staying put now. I'm coastal.
You're staying put. Well, you're living the dream. So it's like I can stay put for a little bit. There's no issue with staying in a I guess, actually, is it a hotel that you're at? I remember we had a little talk about this, but I don't think we've said it yet.
This one's a resort, so they can be timeshares or resorts, but they're basically all one-bedroom condos. They have full kitchens, bedroom, family room, dining area. The balconies overlook the ocean, so we're on top of the sand over the ocean. That's what the resort is at right now. So it's wonderful. Like, I open up my door, and there's crickets everywhere, and you can hear the ocean, so maybe y'all can hear. I don't know.
I hear that.
And then there's the ocean right there.
See, if I could do that and be right by the ocean 24/7, I think my motivation would be a lot higher. it's a little bit easier to say, yeah, I'm motivated and I'm chilling by the ocean, or I'm in my room and I can just see, hear, and experience the ocean just from my balcony.
Yeah, so I don't have to go anywhere. I can just open the door and there's the ocean and I'm happy. But, I mean, it gives me incentive. I wake up at 5 a.m. every day to work. So I start working with all the devs and stuff at 5 a.m. until about 2 p.m. because they all start to go to sleep with their international hours. And I'm East Coast time now. I've been East Coast time for the last 2 months while I've been out in the Caribbean. And going from island to island. So it's been East Coast time, except for the Grand Caymans was, I think, Central Standard Time. It was like 2 hours difference, California versus 3. So that kind of threw me off for a little bit. But my internal clock, I've really never, ever set an alarm clock. I haven't set an alarm clock forever. And I just automatically, even though I'm in different time zones, automatically wake up at 5 a.m. So
5 a.m. is the time to wake up. For me, it's not possible, but given, maybe it's the fact that you come from Cali and you're like, oh yeah, I can, I'm used to like waking up at, I guess, actually, no, it's like when you go to sleep in Cali, I don't understand it. Like it confuses me. I'm like, I try to piece it together, but it's almost impossible to piece together.
Well, when I go back, I just have to adjust to the time zone again, and maybe I'll be back at 8 a.m. Well, 8 a.m. Eastern, but 5 a.m. Pacific Standard. I mean, when I was in Hawaii, Hawaii was 3 hours different from California behind. And then I was trying to stay on California time because it had a big lag that way. But that's okay.
That's fine.
Time zones.
Enough. Yeah, otherwise we're going to start getting tired and adjusting to those time zones. That's never good.
So here for a couple more weeks, and then heading back towards California. So it'll be the adventure. The last time I was in the Caribbean Islands was in 2021 after COVID, and it was so different. It's like there's so many people now. When I came out before, they had just opened the islands back up, and then the cruise ships just started back up too. The ferries just started back up, so the islands were really quiet. Like, I was in Aruba, and it was really, really quiet, and St. Martin and Bahamas and all that stuff back in 2021. And, like, it's so different now. There's so many people everywhere, and, like, it's funny, like, looking back at how it was then to how it is now, and, like, all the people enjoying themselves and on vacation, and there's just people everywhere. But, I mean, it's great. It's great. It's interesting to see. This is the first time I've been to St. Lucia, though. So I've been trying to check off all the islands and then creating that algorithm with the travel bots and then finding the lowest air, too, and finding, you know, like the best deals and luxury resorts at the lowest cost. Like, this is why I'm traveling. One of the reasons I'm traveling, because the AI bots were built out for it. So I think now I'm up to 33 or 35 countries now because of it on a total of travel.
Oh my. 33 or 35? See, I haven't been to 5 countries. I don't think. I think I capped at 5. I think, yeah, I maybe tapped 5. So you're 30 up on me, which is crazy to think about.
I did 28 countries in 2.5 years right before COVID. So from like 2018 to 2020, I did around there. 2017 to 2020, I did 28 countries in 2.5 years. I like I was on a challenge. I'm going to see, I'm like, how many countries can I go see in a shorter period of time? And that was like my challenge. Because I saw this article about a girl who was traveling the world and she was trying to catch as many countries as she could. And I think she was up to like 57. So I'm like, oh, that'd be a good challenge. I think I'll try that. Right. 57 countries. Yeah.
Oh, that's how, so kudos. How many countries are there?
She had me beat. Like,
yeah.
I don't even know.
I feel like that's something that we should know.
Right.
But you know what? A little fact check.
Right. Yeah. So no matter where I'm in the world, how many countries are there?
It says ranges anywhere between 193 to 237. I don't know how you can
see.
Yeah. So quite a few.
There's plenty of opportunities for people to enjoy life, right? You have 193 or whatever that number was on different countries to explore. That's plenty of time.
plenty of places to go.
Right.
So that's it. If you want to experience that, I guess the AI bot is the way to do it. Cause I haven't experienced it. I can't say that I have yet, but I know I want to. Given that I know all the results and the cost, but
right,
knowing what you've done, I can't really say that I have anything holding me back.
Yeah, so flights have been like really good, and it's peak of summer too. So this is a peak time of traveling. So I've still gotten smoking crazy deals. Otherwise, I wouldn't be out here still. But the good thing is like no matter where I'm at, it being able to be remote and be able to work wherever I'm at is the best part about it, right? Because like if I was stuck in an office, then I would only get my 2 weeks a year and be able to travel only 2 weeks out of the year. But because I have that flexibility and I have that schedule, I can wake up in the morning, as long as I have internet, I have Wi-Fi, you know, cell phone, a laptop, I can wake up at 5 a.m. wherever I'm at. Work till 2, take my little break, relax on the beach, open up the patio door, see the beach, get inspired, and then go back to work again like 5 p.m. till 12 a.m., 1 a.m. again, and then start all over again. And as you all can tell, I have no voice. We've been doing spaces and VCs and AMAs and Twitter and talking to different groups, and I've officially going back to when I have no voice again. So I don't sound like myself right now.
I'm lucky. Yesterday, my voice was shot, and today, my voice is fine. I'd say it's better today. I can't tell. Like, I don't think anyone can really tell when their voice is, like, starting to go or starting to come back, but you can definitely tell when it's gone. You'll be able to, you can, like, feel it. Like, yeah, I have no voice right now.
Right. But,
yeah, I don't know. It's been long. It's been fun though. I'd say talking to everyone and sharing what we've been doing is probably the most valuable thing that we're doing, and it's also super super fun.
Right.
Watching the growth. Oh.
Yeah.
That makes it all worth it.
And we're going by leaps and bounds right now. So I know that the crypto market's been effective, but like we've had some events happen in the crypto space lately, but that also gives us time to build more, and our technology, it keeps improving. Even though there may be effects in the world or effects with the crypto market or the financial markets or whatever is going on, as long as you know the cycles and you know that we always bounce back up out of a cycle, then it's okay, right? So the thing that's been going on also, like in Ethereum and BTC, so Bitcoin and the altcoins and the meme coins, is we had a major pullback in the last few days. And so if you know the cycles and you know what happens, like the Fed had met last week, and historically, whenever the Fed meets, we always have a pullback no matter what. So that's just typical, unless they announce some really good news, like say that they're going to lower interest rates or something. But so we always have a pullback. So that was like the catalyst, the beginning of it. And then world events, of course, would stack on top of that. But we have a lot of new investors in crypto right now. So we have like institutional investors, we have countries investing in crypto now, we have normal people coming over from Web 2, like what they're trading on their platforms like Robinhood and all the other platforms and buying into crypto. but they're not used to our cycles. They don't see our cycles where we dip down. Doesn't mean that we're going to bottom out forever. It means that we dip down and then we have a bounce back and a rebound again. And so just across the markets, people get scared. And when they get scared, they sell, which causes the markets to go down even more. So I know on Monday, we had a red day yesterday in the financial markets, like on the Dow and the NASDAQ, there was a big pullback on there. They were saying it's like one of the biggest dips, but it's normal. This is what happens, right? This is what happens in a cycle when emotion gets involved. So there may be a catalyst, a certain event, but if you sit by the sidelines and you wait for it to do its bounce back, you usually can get at a better price versus selling off at the bottom. So that's one thing that we try to instill and try to help people through, is that you need to take emotion out of the game. And we did have a big bounce back. So over the weekend, Ethereum had dropped down a lot. So we went onto our private chats. Yeah.
It dropped to 21.14 at its all-time low from that, from the sell-off.
Right. And that, and we haven't been that low in a while since I think it was January when I looked at the chart. That was the last time we were that low. Right. January 25th, I think it was. But so this is going to be normal. And it's just trying to find out where the bottom is. And so if we're reading charts and you're seeing what's going on, you know that there's going to be a bounce back. And so people that were selling off kind of made it go down even more because emotion came into it. And so once it finally settled around, it had its bounce. And so we were calling out plays on the ETH coming back, and it, the ETH came back and revived. And now I think it's like at 2460 right now, but it had gone back up to 2550 and it still has room. It's going to range trade for a little bit, still right around here and hover. And then in a perfect world, have a bounce back again. But if you take emotion out of the game and you wait it out versus just thinking that it's the end, then you're okay. But when you get emotional, you end up selling at the bottom and buying at the top. So then it'll have its big run again, and then people enter in again, and they're going to enter back at the top, and then they end up selling at the bottom. So just take emotion out of the game, wait it out a little bit, see what it happens, wait for that bounce again, and then enter back in or do what you're going to do.
The easiest thing to do when trading cryptocurrencies or anything at all is just if you notice something and if you stick to a strategy and you can follow that strategy without emotions on the line, you can either save yourself a lot of money, you can remove a lot of risk, or you can capitalize on it. If people were paying attention and we were telling people what was going to happen, all the signs were leading up to it, that there will be a pullback because there are a lot of major world events occurring right now, then people would have been able to either stay bull or short or whatever they wanted to do to hedge their bets or to go against it at that time, because everything was leading towards a downturn. And we knew that based on our algorithms, and we were getting pings and saying, hey, yeah, the market's looking a little rough right now. It's telling us to sell. So if you listen to the pings and you sold, you would have saved yourself, what is that, per Ethereum at around, what is that, $800? And that's per Ethereum you had, so around $800. That's significant for most people.
Yeah, I de-risked and went into stables at 3486 because it was hovering around 3550. And then I saw that we were going to have a pullback, plus the Fed was coming out, so we always have that pullback at that time. So I went into stables, which is basically when you're trading crypto, going into stables means going back into your home currency, say like USDC or whatever you're holding, so that it doesn't have fluctuation or risk. And so I went in at about 3486 and then waited it out, but that was back in like July 22nd. So I was holding, even though I saw fluctuations where it was going above 3550 and then coming back down below, so it was like hovering around that line. But I didn't like get tempted and go back into it. I just waited it out. And then the Fed met. So we always know whenever the Fed meets, it takes about 7 days before it recovers again. It'll have a pullback. And so the Fed met last week. And then we have our events. But now I went back in. So we were watching the chart and we went back in at 21, so bottom 2114, I saw about 2117. I went back in at 2162, I think.
I think that was the range where it was confirmed to break out. Yeah.
So that was a big spread. So I saved about $1,300 on the down.
Which is a lot of money. That's per ETH, too. That's mm-hmm. per singular ETH that you had. If, let's say you had five, that's your 1,300 times five you saved.
Right.
So the opportunity to save, to make, whether you wanted to just stable it, sell it for a stable coin, USDC, where the value doesn't change, or short the market at that time, it's completely up to you. Depending on how advanced or beginner you are, you could have done a multitude of things with that information that we provided.
Right. And if you short, you're hedging. So say you're staying in your position and you decide not to sell out or to exit out, you can short it. So if you're shorting it, you're saying, yes, Ethereum hypothetically is going to go down. So I'm shorting it. I'm saying my position is saying it's going to go down. And however much it goes down, now you're adding value in that short position, and the short position becomes a higher number, right? So you're hedging that difference that it goes down. You may be staying in your position, but the difference between what you were at and how low it goes, and that spread is where you're making the money. So it's counterbalancing what you may be losing in ETH, but you're shorting it and you're getting money from there.
Exactly. And the benefit to doing that is obviously you can save money, or you could make money from it. You could be in Ethereum for, let's say, you could have put $1,000. So that $10 you put in Ethereum, and you said, oh, it's going down, I'm going to put another $10 on a short, and you put a little bit of leverage on it. And you could be making money on top of it too. Your $10 could have went down, but you're making money on that, on the spread. And you could have turned that $10. What was the percent that it went down from that top, like the 3,400? It was around,
I think 30%. No more than 30%, right?
40.
Yeah.
It went down 40% from that. So 40, you could, if you leveraged all the way down, that would have been a 40% gain. And if you did a 10x leverage, which very, very, very risky. So that's assuming that gives you like very little wiggle room going up on the upside, and a very strong profit potential on the downside. So that 40% decrease turns into a, what is that?
400%
increase on your gain. So that $10 would turn into $400 or $40 on the down.
Right, and so if you're still in your position, you're hedging it. So basically you're covering yourself. So if it goes down, but then if you're not in any positions, you can trade on those alone and make money too. If you anticipate cycles, you know what's happening, you know what kind of news is, what the sentiment is in the market, how people are reacting in the market, you can hedge yourself that way, or you can play those positions. And then when you find the bottom too, and then you see the bounce, then you can go long, because most people sentiment is still thinking it's going to go down more. But if you're trading and you see the bounce and you know it's going to go back up, you can go into a long position and reverse it back up and make money on that spread too.
Exactly. So when ETH bottomed, you could have said, "What? Well, it's the bounce." And if you're knowledgeable of the return of the market and the bounce back, which we called in our server at AI Signal, and AI Signal Bot on Twitter, and you can go through AI Signal Bot and get to all of our socials, our Telegram, and we called the bottom, we called the reversal, and we said, and you could have taken that information and longed it at that point, and you would be up right now as well. So you could have made money on the down and the up.
Right. So
there's a lot of options there.
Right. So we were talking about what it was going to hit, how low it could go, what the bottom was, and then also calling the points that was going to hit on the way up. And it hit those points exactly too.
Yeah. And if it hits those points, then it's going on an uptrend, right? So I think one of the points was like 26, 30 something, and it tapped it and then it reversed, right? But right. It tapped that point, so it's confirming an uptrend.
Right. And of course, as soon as it taps it, it's going to have that small pullback. And then if it breaks through that, then it moves to the next point.
Exactly. It's those barriers. It's the psychological barriers that we look for as well. Because at certain prices, you have people wanting to sell, you have people wanting to buy, take profit ranges, or the fear comes back in. Oh, it's going to it tapped and it's like, oh, maybe it won't break this, maybe it will. So people try to front run it and be like, oh, maybe I can get it before other people sell, and they cause a sell off, and there's a bunch of emotions that come into line. So if you're able to take that emotion out, you can capitalize on these other people's emotions, right?
Yes. That's what we've been talking about for a while, and the way that everything played out is kind of, if you go back through our different podcasts, you can hear what we're talking about on those emotional resistance points and breaking out. So not only does it do it in the main, like on ETH and BTC, it also does it on altcoins too, and on meme coins. So meme coins are the higher volatility, and meme coins are tied to ETH. So if ETH is going down, then the meme coins overall portfolio will go down while ETH is down. But when ETH is on the rebound and ETH is going back up again, all of the meme coins valuations go back up too, because they're tied to ETH. So people don't realize that. Like, they think, oh, the market's red, everything's going down, but we're tied to ETH. So it's paired with ETH. So say you have a meme coin and the meme coin is at 1 million, and then ETH drops 20%, that meme coin's going to drop 20% also, even if there's no on the chart, because it's tied to the valuation of ETH. It's like gold hypothetically being tied to the dollar, is kind of like the same example, but not necessarily. So like ETH is tied to meme coins. So like meme coins, if you have $1 million cap again and ETH goes up 20%, that token usually goes up also about 20%, depending, because it's tied to ETH. But if it goes down, if there's no sells, that meme coin's going to go down also. If there's no buys and ETH goes up, then the meme coin's going to go up also, because it's paired to ETH. And people don't understand that. Like, they don't realize that. They're like, what's happening in the market? All of the market's going down, but it's not. It's just tied to ETH. And when ETH is on its bounce back up, then everything else bounces back up too.
Couldn't have said it better. It's the correlation, right? It's the correlation in the market. Everything in a way is tied to each other. And in the words of Web3 of a crypto, it's tethered to each other, which is another way to say it. You know, add that to the dictionary that we went over a few episodes ago, the tethering of, and that primarily use of Ethereum and Bitcoin, how they're tethered, they move simultaneously along with every other cryptocurrency. If the price goes down of Bitcoin, the price of ETH goes down. If the price of Bitcoin goes up, the price of ETH goes up, and so on and so forth. And it carries through the entire market. But as you get deeper into the market through meme coins, through NFTs, you start to catch these delays, and you're able to capitalize on them and the fear within the market. So you can go in, oh, if Bitcoin drops, you can expect to see people start listing or start selling and or buying, because they're buying the dips, and these dips are very lucrative if you can get on them early enough, especially if you're looking for certain types of assets within it that people are selling out purely out of fear. And there it is again, fear, another very prominent emotion in every market. Capitalization of fear, capitalization of greed, capitalization of hope. And that, yeah, and that by the news, emotion. Sell the rumor. Or sell the, yeah, by the rumor, sell the news. I am so confused right now mentally. Oh my Lord.
Yeah, there's a lot of emotion in it too. So if you know the cycles and you know the emotion, that's what's good. Like, you can follow it and see what's gonna happen. If there's key events happening, you know what to anticipate in the market. And say you don't want to get out of your position, you wanna hold on to your position. Again, you can leverage it with like shorts or options. And then you can, like, even if you don't have to do like such a tight one, like you could say, I anticipate it going down like within the next 7 days. And you can, it's like a time value proposition. So the longer the time and the shorter amount of the difference on the spot where it's at right now. So say something, again, we'll use the $1 million analogy. So say something's at 1 million and you anticipate it just dropping like 10%. So it's going to go to 900,000 hypothetically. And you anticipate that you want to give yourself time of like 30 days or 60 days. the longer the time out is, it's the more expensive it costs. And the shorter away it is from its market cap or its point, it's going to cost you more. So like if you're giving it a spread of, say, $1 million and you think it's going to drop to $500,000, that's a big spread. And it's the odds and the probability is not going to go that low. So the cost to buy that short or buy that option on the down costs a lot less the closer it is to that center number. Like you say you have $1 million and you think it's going to go to 990, then it's going to cost you more. And if you think it's going to happen 2 months out, it costs more, again, time value money. But if you think it's going to happen in like a day, it costs a lot less. So when the fun thing is like if you're just getting into this and you're trying to see if this is something you're interested in, just go pull up the positions and you can see how much it costs, like on the time value money, how much something costs 7 days out, 14 days out, 30 days out, 60 days out, and then how much it costs when it's close to its spot price, like right where the price is at, versus a spread of going up an extra mil or down like 50%. The spread is going to cost different too.
So let's talk about spread, because I don't know if we've touched on spread that much, and we've been throwing it around a lot this episode. So when we're talking about spread, it's the value that the exchanges take when you're buying and selling. And let's say you're buying at $5 and you go to sell that $5 right away, you're not going to get $5 back at the same price because there's that spread. The spread being what you're paying, what the buy price is and what the sell price is. There's the difference between what people are willing to pay and they're willing to sell for. If you want to sell for a higher value, you can get the sale off, but if there's no buyers at that price level that you're looking to buy in at, you're not going to be able to buy it. So you're going to have to pay more per unit that you're buying. Because with Ethereum and cryptocurrencies, you don't have to buy the full unit. You can buy 0.1, 0.05, 0.005. You can buy all that. So you're paying the spread on that price difference. And when you're it's like arbitrage at a certain level. And arbitrage being the difference in price when you could, let's say, a very strong example of arbitrage, you can go buy a pencil at a store for a dollar and you can go sell it on your own for $2 because there's that demand for it. So you're gaining that arbitrage. And these exchanges are basically saying you can buy it for that $1, but you're gonna have to sell it for that point, that for that 50 cents. It may not be 50 cents, but you're paying the spread. And it's the difference. And to capitalize on the difference or to get the most out of that difference, usually it's holding for longer or waiting for a more significant price jump. So as soon as you break out of that spread, then you're able to capitalize on it. But if you're stuck within that spread value, your odds are you're not going to get the same value you put in back.
Right. And it also depends on, yeah. So it's based on like supply and demand too. So of course, the higher the demand, with the lower supply, you're going to get closer to the price that you want to sell at because there's more buyers in it and there's a bigger demand. And so they're going to give you that premium price. But if everybody's selling off and you're trying to sell too, it has a bigger supply. There's more available. So there's less demand. There's less buyers. There's more sellers in the market. Just same like if you're buying and selling a house. And so you're going to get, if you're trying to sell off, everybody else is trying to sell off, but there's not that many buyers, you're going to get a lower value on your price. And if you go from platform to platform too, like a lot of people don't know this. So say you go to trade on Coinbase or you go on MoonPay or you go get your crypto from Robinhood or somewhere else, they're going to have a different spread on the price versus what's the market. So if you go on to like Etherscan, you'll see like what the spot price is on Etherscan. You can see what ETH is at that time. Or if you go onto Ethereum and say charts, you can see what the price is going at the market that time. Or if you go on a Coinbase, you can see what the market price is at that time. But when you go to sell it, the way that the platforms make money, especially like Robinhood and the other platforms where they quote unquote don't charge a commission, they make money on the spread. They make the money on the difference between how much you sell it for and then and how much they buy it for. So they'll buy it from you at a discount and then they'll sell it to somebody else at a premium. And that's how they make their money. That's how they make their spread. Like we were talking about spreads. And then that's also what like Coinbase will do too. Coinbase will sell it to you at a higher amount. And if you sell it to them, you get it at a lower value. And then if you go on to like MoonPay, which you can buy with credit card and you can buy crypto with credit card, you're going to pay the fees plus you're going to pay a higher spread. Like you're going to get crypto at a higher price, but when you go to sell it, you're going to sell it at a lower price. So that's the difference. But there's a lot of detailed information for people who are coming in.
that is a lot of information, but I just felt like we needed to kind of explain what a spread was. It's not too complicated. Options. I think. And options.
And hedging and longs and shorts and. But it's ways, like if you're heavily invested too, you want to learn about this stuff because you want to be able to hedge your position. And hedging your position, make sure that you're covering if it goes up or down, you're still covered. That's what a hedge is. A hedge is making sure that like your money stays kind of even keeled no matter what's going on in the market. It stays consistent. And if the market goes down, you're hedging it by doing a short. So you're saying that whatever goes down, you're getting the difference in that money. And then if the market reverses and you're not buying in more, you can leverage it by buying longs on it and getting that leveraged out. Just like options on stocks and bonds. So instead of buying like 1,000 shares of a stock, you can leverage it. There goes my voice. You can leverage it. And buy options on 1,000 versus having to actually fork out 1,000 times whatever the stock price is, you can leverage it. So no voice.
You know what? The no voice isn't bad though. It's not bad. I couldn't even really tell, to be honest with you. So yeah, that's leveraging. That's your spread. That's options. Just understanding what you can do in the market, right? It's not always black and white. If you want to get more detail, there's options for you to get more in depth with it, to get more advanced with it. Although it's not for everybody, can't say it's for everybody. It's all about your risk and what you want to and how much time you want to invest into it. And it's purely up to you. We're just providing you the information that you can use to go into it. Obviously, everything right. we say is not financial advice. Always do your own research. This is for educational purposes only.
Right, I was just going to disclose. But so the other thing I had said a couple weeks ago, and I probably said last week too, is don't go in with a lot of money when you're going into something new. Like, see what the market does. Like I said, buy only $10 of each thing and watch it go up or down with $10 because that's your, like, you can always look at $10 and know if the $10 goes down to 9 or 8 or it goes up to 11 or 12, then you know it's making money, right? And if it's going down, then there's like a pullback in the market. So you can watch that $10 fluctuate, and $10 is like coffee money again. It's money that's discretionary. You're not going to lose your house over it. It's nothing that's going to hurt you, but you're able to watch the market and you're able to see that $10 fluctuate. So you can see what's going on in the market, and then you can look at the chart and see what's going on in the market too. And then if you look at world events or news events or what's going on with the government or the Fed or when the meetings are, then you're going to understand why your $10 is fluctuating. But it's the best way to start, like paper trade, just watching numbers, or sticking $10 in a trade or $10 in each different types of crypto, like $10 in BTC, $10 in ETH, $10 in a meme coin, and watch it fluctuate so you can see how the market moves. Because the market's more volatile, the higher risk, but you also get the higher rewards. So that means it's more volatile versus if you go into a blue chip stock that's been around for 30 or 50 years, it's going to stay pretty evenly keeled. Like it doesn't move as much versus if you go into a high tech stock that's brand new and came out at a low like market cap or a low stock price, that one's going to fluctuate big, but you're also going to get bigger returns because of it, because it's a higher risk. So
I love how you said market cap as well.
Right. We've been talking too many tokens.
We've been talking too much about tokens, and it shows. It definitely shows. What are you using Web 2 again? I've literally blanked on what the term is in Web 2. Is it field of value?
For stocks?
Yeah. Is it FDV, field of future value, or field of value?
I have to look. It's been a bit.
It's been so long that we just refer to everything as a market cap now.
But the other thing too, so we've been in crypto, we've been in Web 3 for quite a while, for like 4 years or so now, and then crypto since like 2016. But the other thing too is everything's on sell. Like when we have a pullback like this, people don't realize, like they get freaked out and they kind of like sell off. Where this is where a lot of great minds and people that are wealthy make money, because they see it as a fire sale. They see it as everything's on discount right now. Everything is great prices right now. So it's a good time to accumulate. And if you're going to accumulate, make sure that you're doing, again, like risk money, depending on your risk tolerance. But like, I got back into positions that I wasn't in for a while because everything was on sale. So
exactly. It's the patience too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And understanding, and it's the market knowledge. It's not throwing all of your money in at one time too. So if you're going to go back in and you go in and start dipping a bit more, then you have money to dollar cost average down. And
right.
And I've heard it before, and I laugh every time I hear it. People say I've dollar cost averaged up, and I laugh every time I hear that. You can't DCA up. You can't dollar cost average up. You can, but it's not ideal, right?
Well, I did. So I went into stables at, again, like 34.62, and then we bottomed at 22.17 or 22.14. And then I went back in at like 22.62, but I also went back in at like 22.80 and at 2300 and 2305 because it kept tapping those points, and I knew it was going to move to the next one up, so I went back in. So I'm kind of dollar costing average on the leg up.
Would you say that's dollar cost averaging, or just increasing your position at that point? Because that's an argument that I've heard. Is it dollar cost averaging going up, or are you just increasing your position size?
Well, whatever it is, it works.
Exactly. Whatever it is, it works
because then we went back up to 2550, and I'm ahead of the game by like a grand in a couple 24 hours or something. And exactly. I didn't even invest that much. It's just that we had bottomed out, and so I just like went in small positions and they were up. So
yep, there's never a reason to throw big money at anything, in my opinion, because there's always opportunities to make that big money, right? If you don't have if you don't have to throw big, don't throw big. And there's no, unless you have 100% solid proof, which nobody ever does, that something is going up, you don't have to throw in that big money.
Well, it's unless you play on odds and strategy and historicals and
that's
what the Fed's done in the last 6 months, and every single time, what did the chart do, and then go off of that information.
But that, even then, it can't be 100% accurate, right?
But
it could be 99.9% accurate.
But you mitigate your risk based off of history and what things have done in the past, right?
Exactly. Patterns repeat themselves. I think we've said that over and over again now. They repeat themselves over and over again. And if you're one of the people that's very analytical and you can pick up on these patterns, you will do very well. Very, very well.
Or you have a bot that does it for you.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, but
yeah, so the other thing, I mean, we're coming to a close too, but we have been working on lots of technology and updates and upgrades and adding more features and new tech that's coming out. So we have a lot of fun things coming up. And like, if you're a holder, you've been seeing some of the updates today already. So we've done some updates already. So on ETH, we've had updates on the bots in the last couple of days, which is great because like when the market is going through its little cycles, it gives time to focus on tech too. And so, you know, tech's always going to be here and there's always room for improvement. There's always things that you can learn from and then training the models on AI. So we've had a lot of updates and improvements, but we've also been working on the auto trader too. So if you're involved in our Telegram, you know about it. We have AI Signal on ETH. It does the predictive modeling and finds the lowest entry and the highest returns on meme coins for ETH. And then we have Base, which is coming out soon. It's been around for 6 months and it's coming out to the public. So that's been, we've done updates on both of the bots in the last 24 to 48 hours on the analytics and the details that come over. So you can look at them instantaneously and get your information without even having to now go look at official analytics. It's being sent over. And then we have, yeah, we have based off of those two bots, we've been working on numbers with SQL. Like I have like 70 million points of data. And based off of that, I'm able to go off of the best system and strategy on predictability combined with AI and find the best ROI. And so the auto trader auto bot will be coming out like in the next 30 days because of that. We've been working on that the last couple of days too. So y'all think we go quiet and the market's shifting and everyone thinks it's going quiet. It just gives us more time and to focus on making things better.
More space to make things better, make more to improve. So when everyone's looking for that next thing, oh, the market's coming back. What do I get in now? The tech.
We're ready to go.
We're ready to go. And the tech is 100 times better than it was right before. And everyone's right. There's a saying, and I don't know if it's in Web 2, but it's definitely in crypto. Building the bear, pushing the bull.
Yeah, and it's going to become easy in the bull. So if we're able to get through what we're getting through now, when everyone else is saying it's hard to trade and it's really easy for us to trade because we have all the information, when the bull comes, it'll just be a piece of cake.
Exactly. And if you want that edge on the market, if you want to get in that VIP status, that person that's always on top and knows what's in the now in Web3 and in crypto, definitely come check us out at AI Signal Bot. Check out our Twitter, jump in our Telegram and chat it up. There's a lot of information in there. There's a lot of great people in there, a lot of great minds, a lot of great traders who would be 100% willing to onboard you and to help you get started.
Yeah, we're there to answer questions and get information and say what's the market sentiment, and calls are placed in there too, so you can enter into calls or go into ETH or BTC, just trade $10, see what the market does. Like even when people, of course, see red or they see fear, or there's a pullback in the financial markets, that's really good time to get in because you're getting in at the bottom, right? So this is like a good time to invest small amounts of money because it only takes a small amount to leverage if you're getting in near a bottom. Just think if you got into like the stock market, I don't know, 30 years ago or something.
Or even a more recent $10. One, NVIDIA, like a more recent, if you bought an NVIDIA sub $10, reached, what was it, $300-$400 before it split? And now it's back up to 100. Like the opportunities are there to make that generational wealth.
Right. And it doesn't take a lot to invest. It just takes small amounts of money. I know. I think I calculated it out. There's always this saying, like, if you take a penny and double the penny for 30 days, you'll have $1 million by the end of the 30 days.
I saw that 10 bucks you did.
Uh-huh. So I did a calculation. I used to...
Let me find it. I remember you had sent it to me because that's something that we like to think over, and all these different analogies. It relates to the market like completely, especially right now, because $10 can take you a while, like very, very, very far, mm-hmm. considering how low everything is in the current market sentiment. So Let me find it. I think it has to be around. I'm scrolling. We did so much.
Yeah, so if you take the $1, so like you could take a penny and double it every single day, a penny, or you take a dollar and double it every single day. Over 30 days, you'll have over $1 million.
There it is. So, I found it. 21 days, one penny or $1 is $2.097 million.
Wait, you cut out, say it again.
A dollar in 21 days after doubling every day is $2.097 million.
Right. So think of it this way too. Think if you're doing the auto trader and you start with a dollar and you take it to a 2X on day two, and then you double that again on day three, and then you double it again on day four, and double it again on day five. After 21 days, the potential.
There's a lot of potential, a lot of room for upside, and not a lot of risk.
And you start with a dollar. And then if you start with a dollar, the only money you're risking is fit.
Exactly. I think everyone can afford to risk a dollar.
Yeah.
That's less than a coffee nowadays. But
right. Way less than a coffee. I think it costs more for the cream. But anyway, it's been fun. So everybody, like, have faith in the market. We're, you know, watch the cycles. Take emotion out of the game. Be a little bit logical. Use tools and analytics to help you play strategy and odds. Have fun. Enjoy your life while you're doing it. Travel a bit. See the beautiful sunset. So have a great week, and we'll talk to y'all again next Tuesday.
Catch you next Tuesday, everybody. Have a great one.
Bye.
You're listening to Tech Trend Investments with Elizabeth Powell and Joseph Grassa, only on LA Talk Radio.